Thank you very much, Padmataka. Brothers in the Dharma, I'm going to dedicate this talk to a very good friend of mine who I've just heard died. I have to mention this because it's upset me quite a bit. He's an order member by the name of Dharma Rakshita, who lives in India. He was in his 70s and he seems to have died of a heart attack. And he really was a good friend to me, especially when I first went to India, and to a very close disciple of Sangharakshita. So this evening, I'm not going to say more about him now, but this evening we are in the puja going to, I want to do something for him. So our puja is going to be dedicated to him. And I think, Mahasukha, if you could, he loved singing and he wrote songs. So we think we might do some singing, if you could be ready for that. I'll talk to you about it. So yesterday I spoke of the different types of Chan, the different types of Zen. The first of these we saw is Tathagata Chan, Tathagata Zen, the Chan of the Buddha, the Chan of basic Buddhism, basic practice. That's our practice of Chan and Zen. We also saw that as far as the Zen tradition is concerned, the Buddha is the origin of the tradition. Chan and Zen practitioners are followers of the Buddha Dharma, the Buddha way. And yesterday I spoke of the Buddha as the original Chan master, the original Zen master. And I told the story of the Buddha holding up the golden flower. There were no words. The teaching was holding up the golden flower. And in the great assembly, in all of those people, only Kashyapa, only Mahakashyapa understood. And he smiled, signifying his seeing, his knowing, his understanding of what the Buddha was communicating. It's interesting, somebody came to me yesterday after the talk and said the first time they went along to the centre, the order member told this story, told it very well. And as soon as they heard that story, that was it. They were hooked on Buddhism, the first one. This is Osada, who lives with us. Sangapala told this story. That was it. He was off. And I'd never heard that before. That was lovely. So today I want to look into the life of the Buddha. I want to see how his life brings out certain features that resonate throughout the Chan and Zen tradition. For many of you, this material will be very familiar. So I would ask you to listen with a fresh mind. Listen with beginner's mind. You know this story back to front, but listen again. For Buddhists, for those who have committed themselves to the Buddhist path, the Buddha, the enlightened one, is the centre of their lives. This is why we have an image of the Buddha at the centre of our shrine room. The Buddha is the embodiment of the great ideal, the great spiritual ideal, the human ideal of enlightenment. And that ideal of enlightenment, of course, consists of two great aspects, as you know: wisdom, seeing things as they really are, and love, compassion, an overwhelming desire to release others from suffering. Buddhists are those who strive to awaken wisdom and compassion in their lives, awareness and friendliness to begin with in their lives. That's why we do the mindfulness of breathing and the metta bhavana. We're on the path there of wisdom and compassion. If you think of nothing else other than awareness and friendliness, you really can't go wrong. What's hugely important here is that the Buddha was not born the Buddha. He became Buddha. He discovered the way to enlightenment, the way to awakening, and realized that everybody could do the same. He didn't, in that sense, regard himself as unique. Wisdom and compassion are a possibility for everyone. Enlightenment, a possibility, a potential in everyone. But how did the Buddha attain enlightenment? How did he get onto that path to enlightenment? In a way, the conditions for waking up to the path weren't that good, weren't that propitious. In that the Buddha, it's better if we call him Siddhartha at this stage, came from a royal family. He lived in conditions of great wealth, power, privilege and comfort. And so in a way there was nothing in the environment that was particularly painful or difficult that would make you think. It was a smooth existence. It's the kind of existence where you can become very complacent, comfortable, a lot of enjoyment. Yeah, so environments like that, although pleasant, can in fact make spiritual life more difficult. We like to have things nice and smooth, nice and easy, nothing to shake us up. That's what we look for. But if it's difficult, you're very fortunate. Harquin once said, the best conditions for spiritual growth are when it's painful, when it's difficult, when you're tired, when you're ill, when it's noisy, when there's people around you don't particularly want to be with. That's the best time to make spiritual progress. Many of us in the modern West live in a way in a similar kind of position to Siddhartha. Everything is really very comfortable. There's lots of options, lots of choices, plenty of food, plenty of opportunities. For Siddhartha, however, this kind of life was utterly claustrophobic and confining. This is how he found it. And in one text, we find him characterizing his early life, very simple words, as cramped is this life at home. Dusty indeed its sphere. Cramped is this life at home. Dusty indeed its sphere. He felt cramped, restricted in this sphere, this circle. The atmosphere was dusty. Nothing was moving. So it was just gathering dust and dirt, just stuck in the rut of convention. This dust is just the same way of talking about the stench that Master Yunmen spoke about, the stench of our own selfhood, the stench of our own shit. It's the same stuff, except the Buddha was more polite than Yunmen.